Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
What is the good that can come out of this? What can we learn? We're broken from a lot of our habitual behavior, so we're inherently more mindful about stuff, right? We were talking before we started, and you know, I was talking with my middle son about how we now have this opportunity to rethink a lot of the way we run and a lot of our habits, a lot of our ingrained paths, and that's not all a bad thing, right? The Thoreau said, the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, guess what? We're all examining life in a new way, together, collectively.
Hey, you guys, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I have a great episode for you today. The voice you heard, Judge Sean Flerke, who is with us here in Duluth, Minnesota, and he works with people who are dealing with substance abuse disorders, mental health challenges, trauma. And as I talk about in the podcast, I had the pleasure to meet him a while back. And then I had a great opportunity to see him speak at a conference I was at in Bemidji. And it was just a treat to not only hear all of the information that he had to share with us, but his method of delivery is delightful and fantastic. And the way that he speaks about the people that he works with such thought, insight, and compassion it's what we need in the world so desperately. And if I was standing in front of a bench with a judge behind it, he would be the one that I would want standing there. And I'm sorry that you all missed the conference in Bemidji. However, I did find a presentation that he did in the 2015 St. Louis County Health and Human Services Conference that you can find in the show notes. And it is fantastic. So I highly recommend checking that out as well. I am so glad he took me up on my invitation, inviting him to be a guest on the podcast. We talk about a lot of stuff, but we kind of have the focus on this new world that we're living in with physical distancing and quarantine. What does it look like? How do we manage it in our mind? How do we manage it a little bit in our community as we want to help? And how do we, you know, how do we do this? It's a wonderful conversation, and he is a calming voice, I think, in all of this. And he talks about some of the work that he is doing with a few other inspired Duluthians who are wanting to find a way to help in this situation called Looking Out for the Helpers. And we're going to talk a little bit about that too. Before we dive in, I, of course, want to thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And please know that the way this podcast finds its way to people and the information that is on it, which is the meat of the sandwich, the important piece of the whole thing, finds its way to people and helping them is by your sharing it. That matters so much. So if there is somebody, when you're done listening to this episode, if there's somebody that you think can benefit by this, please don't hesitate to pass it on. I thank you so much for that. That is a huge help. That is a huge way to support the podcast, and I really appreciate it. Of course, I welcome any of you who want to be a part of supporting me and Wellness Renaissance on Patreon, which you can find at the Wellness Renaissance podcast page, which is wellnessrenpodcast.com. Not a great time for everybody to do that, and I totally get that, but truly do know that your sharing the podcast, the episodes, is a huge way to support what I'm doing and helping me with my mission. So thank you so much for doing that. And I want to thank Green Home Solutions for being a supporter and sponsor of this podcast. If you are not familiar with Green Home Solutions, they are indoor air quality experts. They are a company that is all around the U.S. If you are going back into your place of business, or you're hanging out at home and you're kind of concerned that maybe there's a mold issue, maybe you're hanging around at home and you're kind of finding out that you're not feeling so great and you think it might not just be allergies, maybe there's an odor issue. You go back to open up the store that you haven't been in for a while and something's feeling weird, smelling weird. Probably smell if you're feeling the odors. You've got a whole different sense system than I do. But you got something going on there that you notice is different that you haven't noticed before. Or you've got some concerns about disinfecting We had the chief science officer from Green Home Solutions a couple episodes ago, so check that out. A couple things that stick out to me about Green Home Solutions that is part of the reason that I am happy to have them sponsoring my podcast is, first of all, how easy they were for me to work with. They were fantastic. Also, the solutions that they create are really able to help people with really difficult chemical sensitivities. And for I know many people who are listening to my podcast, that's an issue for them as well as it was for me. So you can give them a call if you are here in Duluth, Minnesota. You can call Steve and his crew at 218-206-9549. And if you're not in the Duluth area, you can call 1-800-SOLUTIONS or 1-800-765-8846. All right. Without further ado, let's head on into our conversation with Sean Flerke.
I thought you would be a really interesting person to have on to just kind of talk about where things are at right now. Just to give a little background for people, I've met you in the past. And then I saw you speak at a conference I was at and was just super impressed with your message and your attitude about the world. And I think it's one of those conversations that I wish the whole world could have been on, just because I think it would have been really good for all of us. Let's just talk about what's going on with COVID-19 and the whole world shifting.
Well, and that conversation was a few days before the world shifted. Probably the last public event any of us will be at for a couple of months.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, I mean, kind of by way of background or context, I don't remember the days, but I've been doing the judge work for over 15 years now. And one of the things that I've specialized in is working with folks who are struggling with substance use disorder, struggling with mental health, trauma. It's been an interesting time. You know, we've been having conversations with people with high anxiety and depressed and beat up and hurt and not a lot of opportunity. That's my work. Those are my people, you know. And now everybody in the world is talking about anxiety, depression, how to cope, strategies. It's like, huh. The conversations we've been having in order to help people kind of find the path are super relevant now for everybody. You know, I'm having conversations with all my friends about establishing practices, watching what you think, what fires wires, how to take care of yourself, you know, just all the, because now it's so much more pressing. Everybody's kind of tuned.
You know? Yeah. Well, you and I were talking a little bit before we officially started recording about hierarchies and how there's all these divisions and labels and then we kind of divide around that and like you said, tribes and not tribes. And I'm thinking how this whole situation is kind of, it's leveling the playing field in a different way. It's also showing us the places that we're not leveled, but But it is really leveling things and putting a lot of people in the same boat in a very different way than I feel like we've seen before.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, everybody's trying to figure out how to be social when you're at home. You know, how to get along with the people you live with, how to feel some level of agency into the world and into the context. I think that's a big one. But yeah, you're right. Everybody's having a version of the same experience at the same time worldwide, which is just unprecedented. And, you know, even all the endless wars and whatnot are all kind of over there and not impacting and, you know, or an experience that somebody's having. And now we're all having this collective experience.
Right. And it looks different for each of us, but it's still, there's a lot of common denominators in that discussion as well. And like you say, when everybody's talking about anxiety and fear, you know, I think people are fearing things in a different way and what will happen and how long will this go on. There's a lot of unknowns. How is it going to affect our bigger society when it comes to, you know, when it comes to people not having jobs long term? How is this going to, you know, how is this going to affect us? And you know, what do we do? Like, how do we process this from your perspective of the world?
You know, what I've been trying to do and talk with my folks about And it seems it's just being real present in whatever you're doing. Like we've got a text group for our clients, a chat group for women and a chat group for men, and just sending out pictures of the sunrise and talking about experiencing, as opposed to getting so caught up in the what if, what's next, what's the future look like, you know, that trying to ground and be right there, you know, not ignore everything that's going on. I read something last night, you know, if you fight reality, reality is going to win, you know, the idea of how do you be present? How do you stay in your body? How do you stay connected with yourself and with other folk? That seems to be a pretty good start, is just to be aware and be there, you know. It sounds kind of woo, but I think there's a lot of neat stuff there in terms of being able to be present and experience what you're experiencing. You know, folks tend to be kind of in the past, you know, the past is always coming and kind of knocking you down and pulling you out from under, or in the future, you know, oh, what if, oh no, oh no, oh no, no, oh no. And for me, one of the best things to do is just be today, you know, be this moment, kind of stay in it, as opposed to being fractured and pulled.
You know, again, that commonplace I have said about this whole situation is, you know, for me personally, I'm kind of enjoying the sort of calmness of my schedule, and on one hand feeling a little bad about that, and on the other hand taking it in and going, you know what, it is what it is, let's make the best of whatever we got here. And I'm not really freaking out, you know, like what does the future hold, but I think that is, it's that also I know I'm not alone,
right?
And I think that's for many people, I think that is kind of a way that people are helping themselves a little bit, is you're not the only one trying to figure this out. There's so many people in the same boat who are just not sure what everything looks like. And it seems to help. I don't know if it's necessarily the misery loves company, or if it's more so the effect of that we're just all in this little mind space of, well, there's nothing we can do right now. You know, we just have to see what happens.
Yeah. Or is it a dream come true for we introverts, you know?
Right.
Oh, cool. The world's flipping our, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I know. Have you seen the meme that says, you know, introverts, please check on your extrovert friends. They need help.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. And I see it and I'm like, oh. And I can see my extrovert friends in my mind. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's so fun.
I know. I got a kick out of that. I like that. And I think that's for me. I'm kind of an extroverted introvert. And so there's just been this, for me somewhat, you know. And I know that I've talked to some other people right when this was kind of in the beginning. I was talking to people on the phone and we were like, oh my gosh, me too. I've been loving this so much.
It's a weird time, man.
Who knows where we'll all be at, you know, by the end of this thing, if I'm like, oh my gosh, let me out. But
yeah, it's early days. You know, I told you before we started taping, I mean, I have friends and kind of adopted family in Italy, and they're, you know, they're weeks ahead of us. It's way tougher. And they're being told, wait, 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 wait. You know, this is not a quick in and out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I bumped into a quote, it was a couple weeks ago. You know, I quote Viktor Frankl some in my presentations, but it's, and I might not get it exactly right, but he says, when we can no longer change the situation, we're challenged to change ourselves. There's a lot of real solid wisdom in there. I mean, I can't stop. And Jon Kabat-Zinn says, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. And I think those are kind of both the same idea as, mm-hmm. and Frankl isn't saying just give up and don't try and change situations. We're going to engage and fight and struggle and try and bring peace or calm or justice or food, or, you know, we're going to try and change situations. But at some point, if you can't, then you have to ask yourself what's your response going to be, right? Is it going to tip you over? Are you going to lay down and give up? Are you going to, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Interesting time to gain some, either gain some new tools or use some new tools we maybe haven't had to use for a while.
Yeah. The first 2 or 3 days of kind of being at home, I was feeling just overwhelmed. You know, you can feel the anxiety in the air, and, you know, we're shutting everything down at work. And what does that look like? We're a courthouse, you know. And I woke up one morning, I'm like, okay, enough of that. Let's figure out where I do have some agency, where I do have some ability to make choices and have a little bit of control. And let's focus on that. It's not that I'm going to ignore the rest or not be informed or not care. It's just I'm going to focus on where I can act and what I can do. And it's a pretty small sphere if you're sitting at home in some ways. But at least in that, you know, a lot of the research says that a lot of what we get the most anxious about is things that are outside of our sphere of influence or our sphere of control. And
right.
I think we can acknowledge, oh, you know, I really can't control how the hospitals are going to be impacted tomorrow. I really can't control, you know, if we can acknowledge that and maybe let it go a little bit, but then focus on what we can do and where we do have agency. I can take care of my family. I can cook dinner. I can reach out to friends by text or whatever. You know, there are ways that I can have some control and act. That helps free me up anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let some of the tough stuff go. But
yeah, I mean, you know, or figure out, I mean, for me, I'm trying to read the news and read some of the scientists I follow, but not 24/7, you know, there's a place where I'll put that into my everyday so I'm informed, aware, but I don't let it come flying into my phone or come flying into my computer. I choose when to do it, and then I'm going to keep working and I'm going to keep doing. I'm not going to be, I have friends who are just overwhelmed with the constant ping, 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 ping of news, updates, all of that. And they're just, you know, kind of back on their heels. I'm like, I want to be informed. I want to be aware. But I'm not going to let it occupy my whole kind of bandwidth, right?
Yeah. I saw that somewhere I was reading, you know, sort of how do we do this? And one of the things they were saying was, you know, choose a limit of how much media you're going to consume about this, because there is so much to consume, you know. And yeah, it's so much coming at us that you can just flood yourself. I mean, I know I spent some of the first days of just kind of like letting all of that come in, because I'm like, what is this? What do I need to understand? I don't want to miss something important, not even knowing what that would be. It's kind of nice to feel myself being able to like, yeah, let that go. And like you say, choose that time to keep your sanity.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's two ways that we get hijacked from ourselves, right? The prominent one is through our low brain, our amygdala, which is this God-given thing that senses safe or unsafe. So it's our internal smoke detector that's always running and always trying to judge whether something's safe or not safe. It's a beautiful thing, right? That's how we move through the world. But if it's always on, and if you're always feeding it this idea that, oh my gosh, bad news, bad news, bad news, bad news, bad news, there's not enough ventilators, you know, then that's running your system, as opposed to having kind of this integrated response where your prefrontal is kind of making executive decisions and helping to run the thing, but you're also where, you know, you want the balance. You also don't want to be all just cold, logical, and no feeling, no passion, no engagement. But yeah, I think some of just choosing how much to allow in can make a difference, right?
So we don't wear out our bodies. So if our immune system has to fight this thing, we have, you know. Yeah.
And it's a principle that applies it, right? It's like eating or exercise. I mean, if I sit down and eat 75 donuts, that's not going to be good, right? Or if I run incessantly with no rest, that's not going to be good. So it's how do I find these balances and kind of respect the balance of it all, as opposed to one side or the other, all in or all out, you know?
Right. And, you know, you said, you know, yeah, find the places that you can be effective. And I wanted to ask you about the look for the helpers.
Oh yeah.
That you're doing.
Can I come in my shirt? Look at this.
Hey, awesome.
We already have swag. Look out for the helpers. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, talk about what that is and what you're doing.
Yeah. So I have a really dear friend who runs a food truck in town here called The Rambler. His name is John Resnick. And we were having coffee Friday morning before the world collapsed, right? When work was happening, we were at work, all that. And, you know, we knew it was coming. Governor Walz was going to do the announcement that afternoon, press conference. We could see what Italy, you know, we knew. But we were just having coffee and talking. And he's like, you know, I'd like to do something. And he said, we should figure out how to help the healthcare workers. Because, you know, everybody can see that the people that and the system that's really impacted is those guys, you know. And that was a Friday morning, and we kind of, you know, didn't pursue it much. But then it was that next week that I was struggling. Monday I was off, but Tuesday and Wednesday I was just, you know, all the news was coming in, and I woke up Thursday morning and I had exactly what we're talking about. I put in my journal, I'm going to focus on what I have agency about. And I called John, or I texted him, and I teased him because he didn't respond fast enough. So then I called him. I'm like, come on, man. And we talked. And so he does food, right? He's a caterer. He's a licensed caterer. He has another friend. She runs a shop here in Duluth called Yellow Bike. They do coffee and scones and sandwiches and stuff. And he'd been talking with her. And he's like, I said, what do you want to do, John? Let's do something. And he said, well, why don't we send food to healthcare workers? And I'm like, well, you know, Judy, through my work, working on trying to make a difference on the opioid side. And, so I've gotten to know the medical providers up here. I know St. Luke's, I know Essentia, I know Duluth Family. I thought, huh, okay, Johnny's got food, Shannon's got food. I know the medical folk. So we reached out to, actually my court reporter, Brianna, is really good at computer and spreadsheets and running stuff. She's a Marine combat veteran. So she created a GoFundMe page. So Thursday morning, we had the conversation, say, let's do this. Let's try and raise some money and take food to the frontline people. She had mentioned, it's the Fred Rogers quote. He said, when he was in trouble, his mom said, look out for helpers. Or no, sorry, look for the helpers. The helpers will show up. We know we're not the helpers, right? The medical folk are the helpers. So I changed it to look out for the helpers. How do we care for our helpers? We're going to be in this fight, right? So Friday afternoon, Brianna threw up the GoFundMe site, and within 24 hours, we reached our goal of $10,000. We're now at almost $17,000. We've in the, what is that? That's just shy of 2 weeks. We've fed hundreds of people. We are doing runs. I think they're doing 3 runs today. They did 3 yesterday. We've been to St. Luke's, we've been to Essentia, we've been to Ecumen Lakeshore, we've been to Detox, we've been to this little operation called Beehive, a senior living place. We've literally provided food to hundreds of people. So one, we're able to do something, right? So we're activating our agency and doing something. Two, everybody sitting at home is saying, how can I make a difference? And we thought, well, this is a pretty neat little way to make a difference, right? Three, the response from the medical community has been overwhelming. I mean, they're just so grateful. And it's part of it's food, which is necessary to do the work and sustain ourselves. Part of it is them knowing that the community backs them.
Yeah.
That the community is reaching out to try and care for them as they get ready for this storm that's probably coming. And a few people making sandwiches get to make more sandwiches instead of sitting at home on unemployment, you know? So it's like,
right.
It's been pretty cool. And I think what we've said from the start is if we can share this idea, you could do this in any community, right? Mm-hmm. In any community you're in, there are right now people who can make really good food who are sitting there because they can't.
Yeah.
And there's also people who are in the hospitals. I have a friend in Little Falls, Heather Bell. She's a doc over there. She moved into a camper already. She's going to be in a camper for the duration because she can't be around her kids. She can't infecting her kids. I'm like, well, maybe Little Falls. Maybe there's a restaurant in Little Falls or a coffee shop in Little Falls. And you know there's people who would give money to. So if we can take the idea and spread it out, I think that's kind of cool. But it's been a neat thing to be able to have some agency and make a little bit of impact. You know?
Well, and man, you know, I mean, I can't imagine. So it's a weird thing as I'm listening to you say this. You know, I'm thinking from the outside world right now, like we're not in the hot, you know, I'm not there in the hospital.
Right.
But, and I still have heard this from people and seen this from people of kind of like, well, it's really not, you know, it's really not too much up here. So it doesn't feel like it's busy to us. And I have no idea what's totally going on in the hospitals to prep, but obviously everybody has to be mindful of what they're breathing, they're having their, you know, all of those things. And I'm sure there's a lot going on again as people prep and how do we make things most efficient before we have to make things most efficient. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing to think about. The work that you're doing feels like you're preloading, but yes. That it's already so needed, even though in our community, we don't see that it's needed. Do you know what I'm saying?
I totally agree. Yeah, you're spot on. And I was emailing with a friend who's a resident at Duluth Families, so, you know, a doctor in residency, and she said she feels like she's aged about 5 years in the last 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
She's calling them COVID years. And it's exactly as you say, it hasn't hit yet, but they're doing this massive preparation to try and be ready. And then they know, you know, watching New York and the hospitals there, watching Italy, they know that when this comes, they're going to pay an awful price. You know, the hours there, you know, there was a doc on 60 Minutes the other night. They asked her, do you know when you last slept? And she said, I can't remember.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and so they're just, and then the anxiety that we're feeling, multiply that by 100. You know, you're going to be frontline. You're going to be working like crazy. You're going to be worried about getting infected and infecting your family. You're going to be worried about all of, you know, so this massive anxiety build. So yeah, you're right. It's preloading. In some ways, it's got to be not as bad as the actual thing, but that anticipatory fear prep, I think it's tough. So it's been really cool to just send them some food.
Yeah.
And we're sending thank you notes. And it's like, thank you. And we're here. And every penny we will spend on you guys until it runs out, until it's done. You know, we were even talking, wouldn't it be cool to have a bunch of money and then at the end just send them a party, you know, send them 500 or whatever.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's just crazy to think that, yeah, they're already not sleeping.
Yeah.
And we need them. We need them as healthy as they can be, you know, to take care of the rest of the community. And so there's so much being asked of them that I think we as people not in that space, we don't even understand. I mean, watching the videos of the workers who, you know, who are like, oh my gosh, I've only been doing this for, you know, 24 hours and I cannot even imagine. I just heard somebody talking about the fact that they were in a war zone and they said that this that I'm dealing with right now is actually worse than that.
And that's profoundly impactful to think about that. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
We're just, you know, you're on the outside watching and that feels so helpless. And
well, and it's quiet out here, right?
Yeah.
Like I look out my window. There isn't panic in the streets. I mean, you know, on some levels, thank God. Like, I mean, like, it's such a confusing thing, because there's this dissonance between what I see outside my window and what's happening two blocks down at the hospital that I live by, you know, that I can't even imagine is going on. So, you know, when you're in a quote unquote war zone, as we think of war, it's chaos and panic everywhere. And it's, in this case, it's going to be chaos and panic in a hospital setting, you know, inside buildings where outside, I mean, who knows when, I mean, I don't know what it looks like in Italy to be in the midst of all of that right now.
Right. There's this weird tension, right? Where for a lot of folk, we aren't going to feel the impact. And it's clearly the concern is people who are going to be seriously ill and impacted and need drastic medical care, right? So that's a small little number of people. So it can feel like, you know, I told you before, four of my five kids lost their jobs Tuesday a couple weeks ago. So it can feel like, hey, why am I not working when I don't feel this, right? So I think it's a interesting time for us to be compassionate and aware of what's going to impact our brothers and sisters who are going to get this thing, and what's going to impact our brothers and sisters who are there to care, who literally will lay down their lives to care for people. It's a chance for our country to look and say, I'm going to take these sacrifices, even though I'm not feeling the pain, because I can see and feel and understand why it's so important to be able to, you know, who knew we'd know the term flatten the curve, right? Everybody knows. That was a term I didn't know 3 weeks ago. And now a huge part of what I'm doing every single minute of the day is about flattening the curve, right?
Right.
You know, when did you ever think you would be Googling 1918 or the Black Plague to try and figure out what next week is going to look like? You know, like, I tell my kids, good news, buddy. You're living in a year that everybody is going to talk about, or they're going to be talking about for as long as recorded history is around. 2020 is going to be one of those years that people talk about.
Right. And it is so weird to be in the space of watching that happen, like just sort of being eased into it and having the, okay, now we're making history now. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Think about what you were worried about 2.5 or 3 or 4 weeks ago. And it's awful. Some of it's awful silly. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, really? That way, you know, now I'm wondering what the future looks like.
Right.
You know,
I've what already matter?
When I get my retirement statements for the next 6 months or 8 months, I'm just going to throw them away, because it's going to do no good to look at any of that. You know, it's like, no, don't need it, right? It's not gonna.
It's not helpful.
right? You know, and that's, you know, compared to the potential of working, 25 days straight in an ER, that's nothing. My retirement, nothing, you know.
Yeah, the shift of the people that make the world go round right now and make our lives work, it certainly brings that to a very different perspective. I think that's a beautiful thing that can come out of this.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's, what is the good that can come out of this? What can we learn? We're broken from a lot of our habitual behavior. So we're inherently more mindful about stuff, right? We were talking before we started, you know, I was talking with my middle son about how we now have this opportunity to rethink a lot of the way we run and a lot of our habits, a lot of our ingrained paths. And that's not all a bad thing, right? Thoreau said, the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, guess what? We're all examining life in a new way together, collectively, you know. What do the sociologists think about this? What would Margaret Mead say? You know, they got to be just writing everything down to try to understand, you know, who knew you would wake up in March of 2020 and be at this huge shift globally where you get to think about these things, you know?
Yeah, now would be the time that I wish I had a time machine to go forward a ways to go, how What do the history books say? What are they talking about? It? What did they see then that we didn't learn now, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's an opportunity, an unwelcome, really horrible opportunity, but it's an opportunity to kind of pay some attention and think about, okay, how do I want to live today? You know, how do I want to change the way I do things and be more engaged here or less engaged there, you know, make some choices.
Right. What is, as we were talking a little bit earlier, what is sort of the habit things we do and right. What are the things that we want to do or that really feed us? You know, I think it's an interesting way to look at that, whether it's depending on anything that you're doing, whether you have more time on your hands or you're just your everything about your time has shifted. It is that different way of looking at the world and stepping back and just, yeah, I mean, my gosh, we have to think about washing our hands in a different way to be very, very mindful of something that, yes, we may have done, but probably less thoughtfully, you know.
Yeah.
I see the whole, it's interesting, the discussion around masks. And I personally, I think it makes a lot of sense for us to probably go do that. The counter arguments I've seen I'd like to understand them better, but I don't feel like they make a whole lot of sense to me as to why that's not a good idea. And to me, the reason I think it's a good idea, it is that it's one more cue for us when we're out and about doing something that we have to do to not fall back into our old routines. Right. You know, to think about when you've got this thing on your face, first of all, it's a barrier from having you accidentally touch your face while you're out and about, say in a grocery store. But it's also just that constant little reminder that, okay, I need to do everything just a little differently right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That was for me. I think I'm not touching my face anymore. And that took several days. I started tracking it. You know, I do kind of mindful practice and meditative practice. I've had to learn to kind of pay attention as opposed to just run, you know, dumb man. But it took a while to, don't, you know.
Yeah.
Even just retooling those habits is challenging, right? You got to really kind of be aware.
Right. Yeah. And how important they are in something that we can't see the result of.
Right.
You know, you can't see the virus moving around. And I think if we could see it, that would be the helpful thing. But I think this is also a great opportunity to gain some understanding of all of the things we can't see and how powerful they are.
Right. And then back to the agency, then figuring out what can I do? You know, and we're talking with our folks about what does community service mean in this current context. And I had a friend or one of our team members sent in a picture. She was out on a walk and somebody had painted little rocks and painted like beauty on a little rock and just left it next to the trail. And I thought, Maya Angelou says, good done anywhere is good done everywhere. So we're kind of challenging ourselves to rethink how do we do good in the world? You know, maybe writing a letter of thank you to folks working at a nursing home, or we went grocery shopping Saturday morning up at Cub Foods up the hill. And I made sure everybody I saw working there, I said, thank you. You know, I appreciate what you're doing, how you're doing. They're like, man, it's busy. You know, we're just crunching. And I'm like, thank you. You know, so what can we do in the world that's good, even given the constraints, even given the shelter at home, in a way that has an impact? Another person was talking about she was out for a walk and people are chalking the sidewalks with pictures and hearts and, you know, just these ways of kind of announcing life and love and courage and beauty wherever you go, you know? I think that's a neat thing. It intrigues me. And that's one of the things I'm thinking about with you is what are the goods that can come of this? And maybe some of it's this opening your eyes to other folk and figuring out how you can do a little bit to kind of be part of that good anywhere is good everywhere. You know, it can encourage. She was really affected by seeing those little rocks and seeing that somebody was sowing some beauty into the world.
It's that intention, that intention and the attention, right? That we don't always take because we're just doing and moving about the world.
I'm busy, and busy is the greatest value in America, right? I'm busy, right? Well, maybe it's okay to be a little less busy and a little more intentional. The other thing I've been doing is trying to pay attention to nature. I'm working in an upstairs bedroom that looks out, and I'm watching deer during the day. Or it's been really cool to hear geese returning, which says to me they're not super bothered by all this. You know, they're not the rhythm of nature, and clearly nature's also trying to kill all of us with this COVID thing, right? So I get it. It's not all hugs. But the rhythm of nature, you know, the water's running, the snow is melting, spring is coming, the rhythms of nature. And you know, I mean, nature is a regulated system. When we're dysregulated, whether that's anxiety or what, if we go into nature, we will start tuning towards regulation. So even just taking the time to notice and appreciate, oh, nature's still moving. You know, this little fox is still jumping around. The geese are coming back. I hear the birds singing in the morning. Oh, the sunrise, it came up again. You know, some of those things I think are really good medicine for us to kind of be in the game and keep it on, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it is kind of fascinating. All of the stories that I've heard about animals sort of showing back up now that the humans are kind of, kept inside, and it's kind of wild. It's like, okay, the zoo has sort of switched around a little bit, you know. They're like, we get to walk around again, and it's amazing how quickly that has sounded like it's happened.
Yeah, and then they say we're making less smog too, you know, which is an interesting concept.
Yeah, there's just so much I think that we can see from this, or just the awarenesses that this can give us of how much effect we really do have on this planet, how much our movement and our busyness has an effect on our planet.
Yeah. Well, what the meme is, you know, your grandparents were called to go to war. You're called to sit on your couch.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a great grandfather who fought in World War I in the trenches and came back with PTSD, and, you know, they didn't call it that back then, but, you know, I can sit on my couch for a while here. I think I can manage to rise to that, you know?
Exactly. So I'm going to throw this question at you, and you can tell me what kind of thoughts you have around it. Cause this is something that I see come up on Facebook and various things. I just heard something on the news this morning that people are being released from prison with low-level crimes and that kind of thing. And it's causing just that concern of, what does that mean? Does that mean that we're going to, you know, these people are going to come out, and are they going to have a place to go? And is that something that we should be concerned about in thefts or various types of things, which I know obviously you're letting people out, you don't know exactly what they're going to do. But I see that as a concern popping up of people saying, how do we process this? And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, what are your thoughts around that, of how people can think about that?
Yeah, boy, that's a massive question. Where do you start? So I guess one of the places to start is that statistics would show that America, so let's go macro big time, America locks people up at an enormously increased rate over the rest of the world. We have 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's incarcerated population. Over the last 20 to 30 years, America has embarked on an attempt to put lots of humans in cages as a way to solve our collective issues. And the states that tend to lock people up more are no safer than the states that tend to lock people up less. There's no solid evidence for the proposition that people in cages makes you safer. So that's a discussion that you could have for years, right? What is that about? Who does that, who wins from that? Who loses? It's disproportionate impact on minority populations and poor populations. And you go to a prison, and I'm always struck when I go visit places of incarceration, and I do it all the time because I send people there and I should feel that, right? I should see that. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of artwork. There's poetry, there's music, there's art. I'm like, are we locking up our artists? And I get it. Predators, people who are predatory, those folks are the easy ones to send to a cage. You know, I just had the Supreme Court tell me I sent some guy to prison too long for raping his developmentally disabled daughter. I'm like, no, I didn't get that wrong. But then there's this gray area where a lot of people are locked up for stuff that doesn't truly endanger people. And you can, when you dig back, you can see some reasons. So huge discussions. But we know that prisons and jails right now are really dangerous places. If the bug gets in and you can't control for it, you're going to have lots of people. And there are brothers and sisters. They're not other. They're not them. There are brothers and sisters. There are community. They're coming back to our community and the people working there. So it's a real interesting time to reassess. Why do we have people in cages? Do we think that's good? Does that help society? The question you asked is, how do we reintegrate them, and where do we find housing? That's always the problem. You come out of prison, you can't find a job. You can't find housing. You're ostracized by huge portions of the community. What are you going to do? You know, you can stop using drugs or selling drugs, you know, all kind of huge questions. But Minnesota is a safe state. We don't lock people up like other folks do, like California, other states who've gone all in on lock. And we have a very safe public safety system. So, and the other question I have is, what's crime going to do during pandemic? You know, we don't have people out at bars, which is where a lot of our business comes from, is after bars and around socializing and alcohol and stuff going on and fights and all that. Not going to stop, but it's going to be fascinating to see. So I guess the message I'd say is that letting out a low-risk, nonviolent offender is actually not something we should put on the top of the worry list. There are folks making pretty solid decisions about who's in and who's out, and that makes some sense to me.
Yeah, I when I first heard the story of I don't remember which state it was, letting people, it was the fascinating thing of something I hadn't even thought about.
Right.
Of
right.
How fast that can travel in a prison, and then How do you care for those people? And wow. You know, it's a whole different system than I think about. How do we process this? And then seeing that the concern was happening. It's an interesting question. And it's a good question on a good day of how do we do this? Right. And how do we reintegrate people? And I, you know, coming out of being let out of jail at this point in time, it's gotta be a little weird. Right. You know, they can't go out and find a job, just like nobody else can go out and find a job easily right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, it's a little bit of an equalizer.
Yeah. And you know, we've been having this conversation in America, well, all the way back, but the past 5 years, 10 years, there's been huge discussions around incarceration and over-incarceration. And the Innocence Project has shown lots of people in death row who didn't do it. So we're always having these, in the right places anyway, we're having these conversations about what are we doing and are we getting out of it what we want? You know, folks, it's amygdala, right? And it's a good thing. It's safe versus unsafe. Folks are like, oh, we need to lock people up because that they're scary. They're dangerous. The vast majority of people we lock up aren't scary, aren't dangerous. And then we have to ask ourselves, you know, and I always say, okay, you lock them up, but where do they go when they get out? They come right back. They're our neighbors. They're in our, you know, so we need to be invested in making sure when they come back, assuming we decide it's right to send them, they're better, that they've had intervention, treatment, education, they're job ready, and we can find them. You know, you want them coming back better. If they're coming back worse, why are you doing it? You know, I would say, okay, so if your idea is to get healthy and you're smoking a pack of cigarettes a day and it's not making you healthier, would you then go to two packs a day? You know, how do you think about what you're doing, and is it getting you the return you want? And other countries, European countries, do a much better job of addressing problems and creating opportunity for folks that they're sending into an incarceration system than America is doing right now in a lot of contexts. A lot of places, a prison is a scary, dangerous place. And so if you go there, you better become more scary and more dangerous to hold your own, right? You know, when I teach like groups of people about criminal justice, you know, if I get 30 or 40 people, I'll say, okay, if I tell you all that you're going to go to, I'm going to send you all to prison in the next 2 weeks. We're going to send a bus. We're going to pick you up and you're all going to prison. What are you doing to get ready for prison? Are you going to focus on how to speak and share your vulnerabilities and be honest and open with people? Or are you going to start lifting weights and learning how to fight? So if I'm sending you to a place where you know you'd be lifting weights and learning how to fight, what's that going to do to you long term, right? And I'm painting too dark a picture. There's good stuff happening. You know, there are programs, there are rehabilitation, but a lot of folks are not coming out better than they went in.
You know, like you were saying, having people come out better, I think there's certainly some thinking that I hear and have probably participated in my own life at some point in time of the whole, well, you're going to prison because you've done something wrong. Why do you get these benefits? But it's the coming out the other side, you know, certainly working with the guys that I do in the men's groups and hearing some of the people who have spent significant amount of time talk about all of the habits you learn there. And all of the survival skills you learn there. And then you have to come out and live your life out here. And yeah, to ditch those things, it's a, you know, it's a PTSD. It's the same thing as people going to the you know, through the military and going to war. You know, we have to have ways to help people. We want them to just snap, integrate back into society. Right. It's a whole learned survival pattern. So it's, right. Yeah, how do we do that? I think it's been such a gift for me working with the guys that I work with to really gain an understanding of that firsthand, to hear their stories, because it's something that is so easily othered.
Yes, right.
That I appreciate the insights that I have, and you know, and where do you decide to lock somebody up or not lock them up, and how can we help reform? I think we have so much opportunity. And so in some ways, you know, we have all this education system, but our education system doesn't teach us how to be good people. It Right. teaches us how to pass tests. And I think that's one of the things I hear over and over in the men's groups are guys who say, why are we not talking about this stuff in school? Why is this the first time I'm sitting down and talking about these things? Had I learned this, I wouldn't have destroyed the relationships that I was in, but this is not what I learned growing up.
Right. Yeah. And then you know, you look at the demography of folks in custody, and, you know, huge percentage of learning disabilities, huge percentage of childhood trauma, huge percentage of mental health issues, huge percentage of substance use disorders, which tend to hang around with trauma, adverse childhood experiences, learning disability, not fitting in, getting booted out of the systems. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, you talked earlier about how do we do prevention, you know, and a lot of this isn't prevention, but we should be thinking about how do we go upstream and help little people do harmony, you know. I mean, so can I help some little people, and can I help these big people who are struggling with stuff that came up from being little people, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, what can we take from all of the things that we're learning from the big people, and what's going on there, and why they're doing the things they're doing, and help the little people to just not have to have that experience? You know, right. There's this mindset that is like when you turn 18, you're supposed to magically know how to do everything and how to be an adult and how to handle every situation. It's like, you know what? It's the software, man. If you didn't get the software, you don't get the upgrade when you turn 18. It doesn't get installed.
Yeah, right. And I look at, you know, culturally the decisions that we put on 18-year-olds because now you're an adult. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. You know, and everything we know about brain formation now and the time it takes to actually get your prefrontal cortex fully upgraded and online is extraordinary. And we say, okay, little dude, you're 18. Why don't you decide what you want to do forever, decide your schooling path, maybe get married, maybe become a mom or a dad. And, whoa, you know, and having four adult kids, it's like, oh my gosh, this is wild. You know, what we throw on kids.
Right. No, I think that's so true. It's so true. And, you know, we have all the science and we have all these things that we know. It's like, okay, let's adjust. Let's make some adjustments for all these things that we learned. We can do being human so much better than we do, I think.
Right, right. I think that's true. From the connection, involvement, but also, yeah, understanding of the way we tick, the way we think, the way we build and learn, and how we have to learn one thing before we, you know, the scaling. Yeah, there's so much. I think it's a fascinating time to be alive and to read. I do a lot of reading about neuroscience and what people are doing and learning. I'm like, wow. And even the questions they're asking that they don't know yet are just profound to me about how we work and the integration of our mind-body system. And it's just fascinating. Really
fascinating. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting times.
It sure is. Yeah. Well, and again, this is one of those, like, I just feel like we have this opportunity to maybe turn a little bit of a corner with all of this. You know, we don't know what the world is going to look like, but we're going to have to readjust. I mean, as we think about physical distancing and how that's going to look in the future, you know, it isn't like, well, this is going to be over on May 1st and everybody's just going to go back to normal. It just, I had this like fear that we would only, I feel like a bad person saying this, but I had a fear we would only experience this for 2 weeks and then somehow it would go back to normal. And I would very early on was thinking, we need this for a longer time. If it's going to have true effect on how we operate in the world in a good way, we need it to go on a longer time. I don't want anybody to get hurt or I don't want all the things that are happening to happen for people to have to do this. But it feels like the universe or something is saying, we need to shake things up here a little bit.
And the neuroscientists say what fires together wires together, you know, so when your neurons are firing in a new way, it takes time for it to, you know, neuroplasticity is a blessing and a curse, right? It takes time for new stuff to take, to kind of sink in. And so it's fascinating to think about how all of us will change through this time.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what conversations we're going to be having 6 months, a year, 5 years down the road. You know, yeah. I think there's just so much, I don't know. It feels like this has a great opportunity and I'm curious to see what we do with it. Yeah. And I think people are doing things with it. I mean, I think, you know, like with what you're doing and all of those things, I think they are pieces of that puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. I was WhatsApping with our exchange daughter in Italy. And she said, well, I'm hoping it becomes a more caring, unified world. And I said, yeah, me too. I said, but I think it's about what we make it, right? It's not stuff just doesn't happen, just doesn't come together. You know, the putting a man on the moon didn't just happen, right? Lucky day. Look at that. Armstrong's on the moon, right? It was purposeful, collective work and mindset and dedication that puts a man on the moon or builds a cell phone or creates a food shelf or whatever, you know. So I'm thinking, okay, what do we do today? How do we send ourselves and our work today in order to make that a better world in that 6 months, 5 year period? You know, what are the things that I'm going to do to try to steer it that way? You know, Martin Luther King said, what is it? The arc of the universe is towards justice, you know, or something to the effect, it's slowly curving towards justice. Well, I need to be slowly, I need to be moving on that line too, as opposed to going the other way and trying to hinder, you know, how do we build that world that we want?
And this opportunity to be at home and at home in our space, and many people learning how to connect with everybody else in other places in an even more intense way than they have before, lends to, again, different opportunities and different collaborations too.
Right, right. It's like my friends in the recovery community, you know, the paradigm for many years is to go to meetings, right? Whether that's Celebrate Recovery, whether that's AA, whether that's Health Resist, whatever you go to a meeting to be with people who are walking the same path. Some are further along the path than you and can kind of speak into that. Some are behind you and you can speak. But okay, that all just stopped, right? All of that is now going online at a feverish pace. You know, our churches, right? My kid is part of the leadership team up at the Big Vineyard. You know, they had a Zoom with 150 people on it the other day to have a church meeting, right? Wow. And then they're doing their services online. You know, so yeah, well, what's the new reality of how we're going to find that community and that connection, right? Some of it's because we got to have it. You can't sit at home just dark, right?
Exactly.
It's not good for me and it's not good for community. Parts of our culture have been railing against screen time for years. But here we are, you know, without the screens, this would be even more challenging in a lot of ways. It might be more peaceful too, but boy, it's an interesting experiment, you know?
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is.
My 16-year-old has adjusted in a lot of ways really quickly and really beautifully in terms of the video connections with friends. You know, she's got a group of, there are five of them. They're now going to launch a podcast. You know, they have time on their hands. They're working on it. They're connecting by video. You know, they're kind of adapting quickly on that. Maybe faster than some of us.
Right. Before I let you go, any, you know, last sort of words of wisdom, or, you know, ways to thrive in all of this, either from you as we think about going forward, or, you know, even if you have insights from your, what's the word I'm looking for? the daughter, quote unquote, that you have in Italy, from what she's experienced being ahead of us, that you can kind of throw into the mix.
Yeah, that's a little bit, you know, you said earlier time travel, that's a little bit like talking to somebody in the future. They are in Milan, so they've been locked down for a long time already. They were the first part of Italy to lock down. We also have an exchange daughter who's in Paris. Both of those, and they're young women. Italy, you know, the culture is you're out. You're with people and you're out. Every evening they're out, discos and walking and with the grandparents. And both Valentina in Italy and Morgan in Paris have said, we now realize how important it was to abide by these controls really quickly and really early on. And we are doing everything in our power to be super, super tight about following through with these restrictions, because people are dying, you know. And I think it's easy on the front end to feel like, oh, you know, I don't want to do that. The message from them is stick and hold tight and do the right thing, because it's going to get a lot worse. The other thing I've been doing, everybody is, and it's funny, you know, email and conversation, everybody's like, stay safe, which I think is important, right? Staying safe is important. But what I've been replying back is something like, you know, stay strong and be in the fight. Stay safe, but don't sit out. You know, stay safe, but be strong. Find a way to be in the fight. A friend of mine, Roger Reinert, do you know Roger? He's a Navy Reserve, I think, and he just got activated and is on a medical ship in Italy. You know, I think, man, that's awesome. Going over there to help. You know, he had said, boy, it's tough to just sit and watch. And so I'm telling people, be strong, be in the fight any way you can, even if it's painting a little rock or sending a thank you note or find a way to be in the fight, you know.
I think that's really good advice because, and I think a lot of people are trying to figure how do they do that? And I think those opportunities will show themselves. And like you say, it is a different time. It's not just, well, go out and do something. It's wait, how do we go out and do that and keep everybody protected, but be effective?
Yeah. Well, for example, in Duluth, how many people are working in the healthcare system and how many healthcare agencies are there? You could send a thank you email. You could type a letter in Word and email it to, you know, 100 facilities in a day, just saying, thank you. We appreciate what you're doing. Thanks for caring for us. Thanks for caring for our grandparents. Thanks. Caring for children, or send a thank you letter up to Super One or to the law enforcement, or to, you could keep yourself busy 24 hours a day, just sending out some thank you notes. And they, everything I've heard back from our effort with Look Out for the Helpers, the thank you notes are incredible. The people responding to us saying thank you is incredible. It means something, you know.
It's a place where they are in the doing, right? Yeah. Like most of us are sitting back, asked not to do in the same way, but they are in the fray, and it is all about doing, and it's about doing it and keeping themselves, safe, and keeping whoever they're interacting with safe, and a whole new mental way. You know, some of us are just trying to figure out how to wash our hands. They're trying to figure out, how do we do this every step of the way in a whole new way than we've done it before?
Right. I was emailing with members of my team yesterday and said, geez, you know, if I knew I'd had it, so I was kind of bulletproof, I'd had COVID and I was now able to, I'd figure out a way to volunteer at a hospital. I mean, I don't have real skills that are all that helpful at a hospital. They don't need an arguer. but... You know, could I do something? And I get it. They can't take volunteers because they got infectious disease, all that. But, you know, how can you, I think we're all asking, how can we help? And if we can find any little way, back to Maya Angelou, good done anywhere is good done everywhere, right? And if we're all doing good where we can and in the scope and with whom we can and being safe and being smart, then we're arcing the universe the right way, you know?
Right. And, you know, and like you say, the whole thank you notes and just that awareness, that is probably way more helpful than people realize, because it is just that touchstone. I mean, totally different story, but just as somebody who does a podcast where everything I do is very solo, and then I connect with people who listen or who connect with me, and it means a lot, because it's like, oh, okay, you're out there. Yeah, I see by numbers that you're out there. But there's actually a person connected to those numbers.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I heard, it was maybe a year or two ago, I heard a gentleman speaking. It was a podcast or an interview or something, and he had lost his son in the 9/11 attacks. His son was working in one of the towers. And the dad was saying, you know, I didn't get a call from my son. A lot of people got that last call. And he said, I didn't get a call from him. But I was so grateful that the last time we talked before he died, I told him I loved him, and he told me I love you. So what I've been doing for the last year or better after hearing him talk is whenever I leave my children, either hanging up or they're leaving or I'm going, I say, I love you, right? I want the last moment to have been that, right? I'm losing it here. But I find what I'm doing now is I'm doing that with more people. I was on a Zoom yesterday with a couple of friends, and we were about to hang up, and I said, you know, I've been saying this more and more, but I love you guys. You know, and just a way to, you don't know how many days you got left. You don't know if tomorrow's yours or not. Why not live out loud and say the things that you're kind of holding in and afraid to say? You know, it's, why not? What better time than start telling people you love them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a weird awareness right now on that level. I know I was talking to a friend of mine who has a husband who is quite a bit older than she is. And she was talking about that exact thing of, you know, you kind of have this awareness that, my gosh, if something happens, you never know what the last exchange is going to be.
Right, right, right. And the only thing you can control is this exchange, right? The next one might not happen. There's an app that I get that kind of freaks people out. It's called We Croak, C-R-O-A-K. It's literally, so I'd freak out. It sends you 5 or 6 times a day a reminder app saying, reminder, you're going to die. And what it is it's a chance to meditate on the fact that I have today and how am I going to live today? And then it sends you a little quote. Let me pull it up on my phone and see what my quote is right now. It sends you a quote with everyone, and some of them are some of them are beautiful and sublime. Some of them are funny and stupid. I don't own this app. I'm not trying to sell it. Here's the one that I have on it now. It's from Allen Ginsberg. It says, it isn't enough for your heart to break because everybody's heart is broken now. So 5 or 6 times a day, I'm reminded all I have is today. And how am I going to live this moment or this hour or this evening? You know, tomorrow, who knows? That's not bad perspective, right? Jesus talked about that. Buddha talked about that. Clint Eastwood talked about that. You know, I mean, you're right. Back to your point. What can we take from what's happening to us right now that's good? And back to Viktor Frankl, how do we change ourselves in the face of a really tough, tough situation that we don't have much ability to change? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is bigger than all of us.
Right. Yeah.
Share how to connect with Looking Out for the Helpers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So there's a Facebook page. It's called Look Out for the Helpers. There's a GoFundMe page. It's called Look Out for the Helpers. Either one of those are easy to find. Just Google Look Out for the Helpers and you'll find us. And it's in Duluth. You know, we talked about, I don't want people from Little Falls giving money to that cause. I don't want people from St. Paul giving. Duluth can do Duluth, but the idea seems really good to share out too for other communities. I have a friend down in Louisiana. We're talking with her about there's good food people down there. Can we find a way that they could launch something like that? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it feels good if you're the person making the food, bringing the, you know, to have that purpose, to feel like you are a support system or, you know, just doing a piece of helping other people have a better time in their process of all of this.
Yeah. And they're taking their gift. So their gift is food and the hospitality and the care of food. They're taking their gift, they're using their gift, and they're giving it to somebody who's on the front line. So it's kind of win, 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 win. You know, the giver wins a little bit because I get to do some. The cook wins, they're doing. The healthcare worker wins, and then our community wins too. So it just seems brilliant to me. It's so simple and so, you know, it's just brilliant. And I get it. They need ventilators and masks and glasses more. And I asked them, I actually asked my hospital people, could we try and find you? And they're like, no, we're on it. That's a big ask and we're on it. I said, well, what about food? They're like, yeah, food would matter. Food is hope. Food is love. Food is connection. Food is care. You know, that matters.
Right. It's a nourishment.
Yeah.
They need that right now. You know, the idea of all of a sudden, like you say, people sleeping in, I know I've seen things about people sleeping in their cars and things like that. And, you know, those types of things are not, they're not home. These people are not going home to get a good night's rest, to feel refreshed in the morning. They're getting rest to function.
Right. Right. My friend is living in a camper. So
yeah.
She can be a doc and not risk exposing her kids. Yeah. A lot of
stories I think are going to come out of this, you know, and are coming out right now too. But as we go, I think we're going to hear so many things that are just they're going to feel unreal, but though they're very real to those people, you know?
Yeah. And your war zone, the story about the gentleman or woman who'd been in a war zone, that's fascinating to think about, because that's certainly what it looks like from the outside. It looks like a war zone.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. This was great. I bet there's nothing usable from it. You're going to have to throw it all away. It'll be a waste. Oh, God.
Not true at all. You know, no, I think...
You better be a good editor.
I think these discussions are really sometimes what we need to be having and hearing for our own support's sake. I think, you know, I think the... sometimes the basics of what are people doing to get by? What are people doing to process through this? You know, we don't have the, you know, 10 steps to successful living in the COVID isolation. You know, I think there kind of are actually, but I mean, but you know what I'm saying? We don't know how to do this. And we have pieces of this, but it kind of comes down to, well, what is everybody doing and how are people doing this on a daily basis? Because everybody's being affected differently. So something's going to speak differently from one person to another, because there's people who they're just staying home. There is no effect to them, really. You know, that might radically change over time. And so I think hearing some of the support and the ideas and just how do we process through some of this, I think is going to be, I think probably in some places it's, this is already very important, but I think preloading, you know, where we're at here in Duluth, Minnesota, I think there's a lot of value in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I've just been nourished, to take your word, to see all the creative stuff, like Vikra, you know, they're shutting down, but they're creating sanitizer, and first they were handing it out. You could bring in your 16-ounce bottle, fill it for free. And then I saw an article, they took a big container of it and took it to Chum, so that there was sanitizer. You know, these creative things where people are just saying, here's what I do. Here's what I have. How do I offer it broadly in a way that helps some people? You know, my neighbor's sewing masks, you know, and so people are, here's my gift. Here's what I can do. Here's my energy, and here's how I can offer it into the community. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's figuring out how do we, our lives have shifted. How do we fit and how do we support?
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah.
It's a big question. And I think it's a question that we're going to be continuing to ask ourselves as this goes through, and it's going to look different as things change over time.
And I keep telling the young people that I'm interacting with, and the old people too, but this is a long haul. This is, if you think it's 2 weeks and out, you better buckle up, honey, because it's changing. You know, it's like, this is a long, and the part of that's talking to Italy. Part of that is reading research about peaks and looking at, like, this is a long haul. This is a battle.
And if any of us can walk away, who can walk away and say, I wasn't really affected by that, or it really didn't hit our area, then that is not the result of over protection. It's the result of doing the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Think if you could turn back the clock to, I don't know, mid-January or wherever, and know what we know now. And what we would do. And if we could, you have to act now to do the right thing for the future.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel, and I know, I mean, I still hear people saying in one way or another, the whole, well, it really haven't hit here yet. And, you know, but understanding, I think the understanding, I mean, we've had a lot more information of why we're doing this, but yeah, it is that if nobody got sick in this country, as somebody said on, I think from the CDC somewhere, you know, if nobody got sick in this country, because we all sheltered in place right away, everybody would go, well, we totally overacted. We didn't need to do that. But not understanding that, no, that we just did the right thing. And how do you can't prove that until something has happened.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's a very challenging balance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big deal. Yeah. Yeah. And the economic impacts are uncalculable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's oof.
You live in interesting times, right?
Yeah. No kidding. Well, thank you. Thanks for your time and your conversation and just sharing your thoughts into the world and good energy and good information and sort of a calming voice in all of this. I think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah. Hang in there, Judy.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah. We'll see you.
I forgot to mention in the intro that we recorded this in the beginning of April, and it's interesting to see, you know, kind of where we are 2 weeks later, how things have changed, how they haven't changed. Many of us are still trying to figure out exactly how do we do this? How does this all work? How do we feel? And I know tensions are certainly getting high for many people, and this is a very frustrating time. I hope this conversation finds you well, or as well as you can be right now. And I hope some of the thoughts and ideas and information were helpful. We're all trying to figure out how to do this, what this means, what are next steps, what does everything look like. So you're not alone in that challenging and questioning struggle, challenge, whatever you would like to call it. Thank you so much for all of the people who are working in the stores, in the hospital. There's just so many things that we don't even think about that people are out there doing and putting themselves at some sort of risk. So thank you so much for doing that. Thank you to all of the folks who are part of the Lookout for the Helpers. I think that is really clever and fascinating, and thank you for doing that. You know, I realized when I was talking about men's groups, you know, sometimes when I'm recording these podcasts, I kind of get into them and then sort of forget that there's a whole outside world listening. And I talked about the conversations that we have in men's groups. And if you're interested in kind of learning what that is, you can Google the Equality Wheel and you will find a pie, little pie circle looking thing with equality in the middle of it. And all of those topics that surround that are where we spend a lot of our times having various conversations. So just to give you an idea, some of those topics are things like respect, trust and support, honesty and accountability, shared responsibility. The work that I do is part of the Duluth model. So it is something you can get an idea about if you have curiosity. You know, as Sean was talking about his exchange student daughter, exchange was the word I was struggling so hard to find there. As he was talking about her in Italy and going to discos, first of all, of course, I'm like, oh, disco every night. This sounds wonderful. Where have we gone wrong with having dancing beginning at 9 and 10 p.m.? People, come on, bring it up till 7. If we change one thing after this quarantine, when bars reopen, if we ever get to do that again, can we please have dancing start earlier? Anyway, okay, so my point that I'm trying to make is my thought was, what will that look like? What will dance places look like? You know, will we have like a 6-foot space locked out on the floor that we need to stand between, or you and your party get these spaces and then stay away from other people? I don't know. We'll see. It'll be curious. And one more thing before I go. I had to download the WeCroak app because, well, that's kind of weirdly up my little alley. My little badge went off while I was recording this outro. And so I will read to you the quote that it gave me because I thought it was also interesting and timely. The quote is by W.G. Sebald, I don't really know, S-E-B-A-L-D. Not really sure how to pronounce that person's name. Sorry, W.G. The quote is, "Time, that most abstract of humanity's homes." Interesting and timely. If that app is right up your alley, you might also be interested in joining the Death Cafe of the North Facebook group. Sadly, when this comes out, we will just have had a Death Cafe, our first virtual Death Cafe here in Duluth. But join us for the next one. Sarah Seidelman and I are co-hosting, and we have them at random intervals. So check it out, Death Cafe of the North on Facebook, right in line with the intention of the app. So I thought I'd mention it. On that note, have a wonderful week. Take good care. I hope you're doing well, feeling well. Stay safe. Keep up the good work, people. And we will see you next time. Until then, I hope you continue to find the pieces that fit beautifully and balanced into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care.